This is a production of Cornell University.
Okay.
EA meeting, November 3rd, 2010.
Okay, we'll start our meeting. It is Wednesday, November 3rd at 12:23 p.m., the meeting of the Employee Assembly. Are there any late additions to the agenda for today? Beth, did you want to maybe say something about the trustees meeting if you have time? I think you said that.
Yeah, if you want, I can do that. If not, I defer to the next meeting.
Okay. I'll add it on to the plan. So, first business of the day is Vice President Mary Opperman has joined us to talk with us today. She does that each semester, and we asked if she could update us a little bit about the administrative streamlining process and how that's going.
I'll do the best I can in terms of the general overview, but then I think you might want to ask some of the leaders of the different projects to come and give you more in-depth. And I actually think there's a open forum, is it today?
There's one on Thursday.
Thursday, okay. So I'll do a quick overview of where I think we are and then suggest that if you want more details, actually you might want to invite Elmira Mangum, the new Vice President for Budget and Planning, as the first person to do kind of a deeper dive on this. So just as a general overview, you know that the university's sort of been chipping away at a financial deficit that we have. We moved from the original estimate of about a $215 million run rate deficit down to a deficit that we had estimated at over $100 million to a deficit that we think will close the year this year at about $40 million. So we've made good progress in our deficits. We actually closed the books on balance last year, but that's not in an ongoing way. That was because people didn't spend, and so we used a lot of one-time monies, and we had some one-time monies coming in, and so we were able to close the deficit in with one-time gifts and one-time people held jobs open is actually what happened, but not in an ongoing way. So the deficit continues to kind of carry forward. So the long-term goal is to use those plans that were developed over the last couple of years to close the deficit, as opposed to what was done in the previous year, which were those across-the-board cuts. And so we have plans in place, and the major plans in place are in information technology, facilities, procurement, and then smaller plans in place of finance, human resources, communications, student services, and then the centers and institutes and provost areas. So each of those areas, if you look on the website, you can see what part of what is ultimately about an $85 million cost savings initiative, what part of the long-term savings are in each of those domains and how they'll get there. So, and then what the plans are actually on that website. So if you click, you can see how the plans for each of those areas are in place. So I'll talk just a minute about, and spans and layers, everybody's favorite. And then where they are in their place. So I'll start with spans and layers because it's essentially done. So spans and layers was the first initiative to really come out of the box because it was used in conjunction with the budget targets that people got last year and had a $17 million budget target in place. And $14 million of that was already realized in this, will be realized by the end of this budget cycle. And it was actually a tool that was used, suggested by Bain, and used pretty successfully by the university to leverage or exploit the open positions that we had on the campus at the time through the staff retirement incentive and through holding open so many positions. So we said with all those positions open and with some changes that people had in place, can you reduce the number of layers in your organization and increase the number of people you ask your managers to supervise? That's what spans and layers does. And with that, can you increase the efficiency of your organization? And so using those open positions, can you reduce essentially the size of the organization and shrink the number of layers you have in the organization? And from that, each vice president and dean created new designs. It wasn't the only way they created savings, but with those designs, the colleges and units estimated about $17 million in savings. Almost 14 of that will be realized by the end of this year. So that's essentially done. We have those plans already submitted to us, and those will be pretty much finished for the most part by the end of this year. The rest of these are now very targeted to specific administrative areas. And so they'll stream through now from now until probably about 2014, in which case they'll be finished. The biggest ones are in the area of facilities and that relates to people, are in facilities and information technology, and those are starting now. In information technology, we have a new CIO for the campus that just happened. And we have a whole new design for information technology, unlike anything we've ever had here. And you see on the website what the plans will be for changes. In facilities, same thing, very different design for how we will lead our facilities going forward. And from those plans, you can see how the changes will occur. Some of it is in people in facilities, and some of it is in how we will use our energy. And actually, there's a lot of energy savings in that. The biggest area of savings, though, left is procurement. And that's where, without a doubt, the biggest savings left to be had on the campus are. And that actually involves probably, maybe not everybody here, but most of us in the most substantial way, because it changes our habits in a big way. And so if you had a procurement card, how many of you had a procurement card? How many of you still have a procurement card? They did take mine away. And so one of the changes was a massive, they had to explain to me, a reduction in the number of procurement cards and a move towards fewer people buying through eShop, where they will leverage the buying power of the university through discounts. And that and our energy savings will now be the single biggest source of our ongoing savings. And we are really, really, really relying on that the majority of the remainder of the ongoing savings. And so those, in a really fast way, are the biggest sources of savings. And then to a much smaller extent, changes in finance related to primarily the introduction of the new finance system, Kuali, will result in some staff savings at over time as they change the way they use the system. Joanne DiStefano is assuming that most of that will happen through attrition. Similarly, when human resources puts in Workday, between changes in human resources and information technology, we expect that we'll have savings again, mostly through attrition. That will account for a fairly small amount of savings. It doesn't sound like much, just sounds like a lot, $1.8 million in finance and $1 million in human resources, but when you feather that out, pay and benefits, it's actually not not all that much over time. So, especially when you look at it compared to the rest of the savings, which is about $80 million. But those are the big, so those are the big chunks. And the rest of the changes, communications, finance, and HR, are efficiency savings. So they don't have targets associated with them. They change how we're going to do business. So a new onboarding center in HR will welcome all people in one place, as an example. A new recruitment strategy, so we'll go out and we'll recruit to increase our diversity. So not everything related to this is about saving money. Many of the strategies and improvements are about doing things better. Workday, as a system in HR, is about giving tools to people on their desktop to be able to do their work better. It actually has a, before you get any savings, it's a big investment of money back to human resources so that we believe so people can do their jobs better. Ultimately, they will ask us to save money, but first they actually infuse human resources with money in order for us to be able to buy that system. So not everything. It's about saving money. Some of it is about giving us the ability to do our work better. Questions?
I'm curious, Mary. I came to the spans and layers discussion, and I thought it was really interesting. I think it was Chris Halliday and Kathy Berkren who were there and talking about how they can help units and staff kind of look at the work they're doing. So maybe could you elaborate
work
a little
bit? Work redesign.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of what we are spending our time doing right now is trying to... So we are down about 900 positions across the campus. That's an enormous amount of an enormous number of fewer people and really very little less work, if any. So the reality is that we don't see those jobs coming back anytime soon. And we can't continue to have people working like this. It's not healthy. And so what we're trying to do is give people some tools to figure out what to stop doing, because we need to get back to a place where people are working at a healthier pace. And right now, I would say, myself included, I don't think most people know what to stop doing. And if it was obvious, they would just stop doing it, because we're all smart people or we wouldn't be working at a university. So what we need is for people to have some work redesign tools to be able to look practically at their work and figure out how to stop some work when all of the work is important. And so Chris and Kathy have worked with experts in the field from ILR who have given very generously of their time, and with peers across the country. Kathy and Chris are both very well connected across the country, to develop some tools that they work with leaders. It takes about 3 hours to go through some diagnostics together to figure out how, together as a team, you make really hard decisions. If everything you're doing is critical, how do you figure out what you really have to do, what you really like to do, and then what what of all of that great work you probably could stop doing. And so those diagnostic tools are available. The tools are actually all available online, but most units need somebody to walk them through it. It's really hard to do it as a self-diagnostic. And so they, talk about overworked people, they are being called out around campus.
I had a question asked to me just today, and that is regarding the internal job application website, mm-hmm. and if that's planning to continue or go away.
Yeah, so we continue to have the job website. What we're thinking about doing, though, is beginning to have job postings go out at the same time, internal and external. And the reason for that is because we're just not getting enough people in the internal postings. And what's very interesting to us is when we post it externally, we're getting more people internally when we post externally. So I don't know why that is. But we'll probably start a process soon where we put it up at the same time and people can apply at the same time. It doesn't seem to be changing the number of times internal candidates are chosen, but we do need to address the issue of diversity on the campus. And so we have to weigh that there's always a balance. We're not a diverse campus. And so the more we hire from inside, we don't help ourselves in that way. So we have to balance the fact now that we are really nearing the end of our downsizing. We have to weigh our commitment to diversity against our commitment to internal movement. And so I think that's probably what we'll do. We'll keep the internal site up, though. But people don't seem to be using it as much. So it's just very interesting that when you put it up outside, you get more people on the when you put it up outside. So, okay. I don't care. As long as people apply. But we need to address our commitment to diversity as well.
One question I had about diversity, and I think it might have been brought up at the leadership breakfast, was just about the status of the Sharing Our World series.
Mm-hmm. They're we're continuing them. Our next program is focusing on veterans, actually, will be the next one we have.
And how did you get information?
About the Sharing Our World program?
Yes, yeah, I mean, I used to get it.
Well, that's because they took a hiatus last year because of the workload in our area, but the Office of Diversity and Inclusion has the information.
Okay.
So we didn't do them last year just because of workload, but they're back.
Of the budget amounts that need to be cut out of facilities and IT,
that's a good question, and it's on the website.
Okay. Well, I just wondered, do you know what the percentage of that will be coming from staffing?
You know, I don't know, and I'm not sure that they know exactly. There's not as much of a target on staffing, if any, in facilities. I don't know that they have a specific target in IT. In facilities, you can look and see where their each of the areas is. They did most of their reductions already on the staffing side, and so I don't actually think they have any staffing reduction plans in the facilities area.
It's more efficiency things.
They
or
have energy, and then they did a lot of reorganizations because they had so much. I want to say they're down, I almost think 15% already in staffing. They have a high turnover in some of their jobs, and then they were hit very hard in the staff retirement incentive and held those because they knew that they were going to be reviewed. They also took a very deep cut in their temporary staffing in the skilled trades area. So they laid off dozens and dozens which sounds, when I use the word temporary, many of them had been with them decades. We call them temporaries, but they're not. It's a unionized workforce, so they come up from the bench. And we use the term temporary, but it's not really a temporary workforce. It's just the way you use bench unionized workforces. So their complexion of that workforce is totally different today than it was in 2008 already. So they're probably about done.
So is the new IT plan up on the website?
The IT design is up, mm-hmm. and their update is up. Yeah, it's very transparent. You can see where they're heading. Again, another area that has held open a number of jobs, 30 or 40. They're much, much smaller than they were.
Mm-hmm. So will they be more center-based then?
They have a regionalized plan for some areas, the help desk, and also some of their services. But I think the CIO wants to take a step back from some of those and have a chance to look. So some of us are already moving into the regionalized centers for some areas. Again, much of this, from a depletion, a resource depletion standpoint, we are probably as small as we can be. So the question, so that's my view. the question now is, will some of that complexion change? You know, will we modify some areas and, you know, shift around? Maybe. But, you know, we are small, in my view, for what we do. So you heard, I purposely, when the question came up at the open forum, is there a target for staff reductions? I purposely did not answer that question. I asked the budget vice president to answer, and you heard her say no. There is no future reduction plan for staffing. I stepped aside. I let her answer it because I felt it would have more weight if the community heard it from her. You know, I can never say to this community there will be no more layoffs, because every year I've been here we've had layoffs. But there is no more mass reduction of staff planned. Of course, we didn't do mass layoffs on this campus ever through this. We were very careful not to do them. Painful as it's been for the people who stayed. We did it through the early retirement incentives, through holding jobs open. We did have layoffs, but we didn't have as many as we had originally feared. Now the strategy needs to be aligning the work to the people we have left and getting people's workloads down to reasonable amounts. That's where we have to focus. Starting to move people to, helping people to figure out, if everything you're doing is important and good, how do you figure out what you can stop doing? That's what we have to get people to focus on. If everything you have on your plate is something you feel you need to do and you can't get it all done, how do you figure out what to stop doing? That's what we have to get people to focus on.
So how do we give staff the tools to be able to say that to their supervisors? Because a lot of staff are just trying to, like, do everything, and they're saying, I need help, and
yep.
it's not always viewed as, you know, that you're doing everything. I don't know,
yeah.
It's just hard.
Well, I think, of course, there's always going to be a non-sympathetic supervisor here or there. Generally, I think supervisors and leaders are sympathetic to it. It's just hard to know how to address it. So I think finding a voice for it, figuring out how to say it. I think we're not a community generally that knows how to say it well. So people don't voice it particularly well. You know, we are pretty good at kind of sucking it up, and so figuring out how to give voice to it in a way that managers can hear it. You know, this is I'm having a difficult time figuring out how to get my workload lined up with the amount of time I have. Can you help me? You know, not feeling like you're putting yourself at risk if you do that. So that's hard. You know, if you don't feel like you're going to get anywhere, you're not likely to say it. Managers need to call out for help. They're not likely to do that if the person above them doesn't feel like somebody who's going to hear you. That's what Kathy's group is there for. The best way to get this done in an efficient way is to get up to the right level and then, right? Because if every little teeny work group tries to do this, it's not going to work. You got to get up at the right level and get the priorities set at the right level. You can't have a cascade of too much work coming down in an avalanche and this poor little work unit down here trying to figure out what to stop doing. It's got to come high enough up from the unit that the work priorities are reasonable for the number of people that have been left in that organization. And so one thing that we're doing is, and you heard actually Kathy say this, the senior leaders of HR meeting with all the vice presidents and talking to them about how much work is in your unit, are you aligning your work with the amount of people you have in your organization, starting that work at the top of the vice presidential group. A number of the deans have actually already started this. It's tough. I'd sleep a lot better if I had an actual answer as opposed to a series of, you know, half-baked processes. There's not actually an answer to this. There's processes, there's conversations, there's thoughts about it, but in the end you have to have a climate of trust and a willingness to try something that may or may not be the right thing, and a belief that if you pick the wrong thing, it'll be okay that you picked the wrong thing. And it's about risk and a community that sticks together if you made the wrong decision. There's, you know, if there was a precise methodology that did this, you'd put all of the, you know, the formula factors into a computer, crank it out, and somebody would stand at the end of it and go, stop doing this, right? Well, I mean, that would be the perfect answer. So my general reflection of all of this is sort of, you know, we're in a difficult time in this whole country. We are impatient. We're grumpy. And you know, and we're kind of afraid. And if your perception of where you are on the, I'm sorry for this term, I don't mean it this way, but on the food chain, is that you're at risk, you're less likely to speak up and say, I need help, I'd like some help. And that's not good. So the leadership is going to have to be courageous about helping out staff who have done everything they've been asked to do and now need the leadership to support them.
I think the Cal did a really bold move when they canceled an academic department, the education department, and I've just been curious from you, Mary, how many people that might have affected, staff, faculty, and if you haven't heard from them.
Yeah.
And anyway, I think there's a quick question.
I think there's nine faculty, I want to say seven or eight staff, all of whom have been promised work.
Right.
So the faculty will all be moved to different areas. There's more than that in Adventist, I don't exactly know. The staff will all be placed elsewhere. The programs will all continue, and they're working on that now. It'll be a 2-year move before everything happens, and actually I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the most important programs for some of our staff is a program called CLASP. It's a program that matches some of our employees who are still getting their GEDs with students who help them do that. And so that program actually will continue.
It's
currently through the education department. Mm-hmm. The leader of that program will be housed somewhere else. OHR staff, the staff person who runs it, will continue to do that, and they'll find students from other places to be the student partner to the adult learner. Yeah, it was. These are hard decisions that need to be made. They're really hard decisions. Nobody wants to make them. You know, you never want to be the dean or vice president who has to make an unpopular decision like that. But they made it early enough that the people will, you know, find other places.
Mary, one other thing that I thought was really intriguing in the spans and layers discussion, and I think Kathy talked about this as well, is this idea of growing people in different ways, so kind of pairing them up into different types of positions that they may be interested in. Is that similar to what the DFA does with their mentor program? Is that kind of thing?
So those are all possibilities that will happen once we get a better handle on how we're changing in a more flattened organization. We are just starting to understand the impact of spans and layers. We didn't do a full-scale spans and layers change because it wasn't fully embraced. So some places did it. You know, if you do spans and layers and you don't have a budget target, people generally love it. But when you have an underlying kind of threat of a budget cut, kind of hard to love it. So in time, I believe people will get very excited about spans and layers as it has less of a negative connotation to it, because it's actually a really exciting opportunity for people to grow positions and look differently at work. But you can't, when you introduce it as a way to save money, it's kind of hard to get real excited about it. So we haven't really yet explored all of the different ways that it can advance work and jobs. So what she was really talking about is ways in which, and I hate to do this, but we will need the system for HR to really be able to do this. But what she was really talking about is as you flatten organizations, you look at job growth completely differently. So jobs, instead of only having upward progression, have sideways progression. And it means changing everything. It means changing your whole comp system. So that the only so instead of job growth up, you have job growth sideways. It means changing your competency requirements, means changing your training requirements. And for HR as a division, we're only beginning to understand what all of that will mean. So it's going to take us, I think, quite some time, because it really means dismantling everything we've had and rebuilding it to doing that. And I think we're quite some time away from that, because spans and layers only touched a fraction of the campus, which means only a fraction of the campus has fewer layers and jobs that look like this. The other half is still very hierarchical with these, you know, job families. So in time, I think you'll find people actually really excited about these jobs, because you get a lot more decision making in a flattened organization, but it's a ways away. So it's not really mentoring as much as it is actually embedded decision making in a bigger job. So instead of it being management oriented kind of job growth, it's more lateral job growth. And you pay these jobs very differently.
One of the things related to Tanya's earlier question about staff feeling, she didn't say this, but underappreciated, mm-hmm. or undervalued. What I've noticed in the budgeting process, the budget cut reduction process, one of the first things to go was the staff appreciation,
yep.
kinds of things. And I think that was maybe not the best decision. I mean, I understand it was a low-hanging fruit. It was easier to get rid of it. But the impact is that we've got a lot of staff who are feeling, why do I come to work?
Right.
And I think, I don't know that there's a question in it other than just
an observation.
Yeah.
I think that's right. And so part of the reason why there was only 1 year of across-the-board cuts was exactly that. That when you don't do strategic budgeting and you just do across the board cuts, people cut what they can without any strategic planning. And so what do they cut? They cut what they see. And so it isn't because I think that we had leaders who don't want to do staff recognition or think that the right thing to do is hold jobs open that they need really badly. It's because when you don't give anybody any notice and you say, you have to whack 4% off of your budget in a week, they go, I can't do that strategically, so I'm going to cut everything I can out of my budget, and that's what they did. I think the goal is to use the ASP planning so that we don't have to do that again. And that's the point of ASP. Painful as it is, it's so the provost doesn't have to do across-the-board cuts again. And the hope is that the budgets can be restored, at least where possible, to having some, I mean, we've never been particularly flush, but some ability to put some of that back into the, you know, we've always been pretty skimpy in some of those areas, but put at least some of that back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we were truly, and we were not the only one, we were at a really dangerous precipice at this place. And so, you know, what the university did to stay liquid was what we had to do to stay liquid. But we're not there now. And now we have to normalize. And that's what we're doing. We're in a different place now, and what we have to do now is what different than what we did then. You know, and that's not to say we're flush. I mean, we're still carrying a pretty hefty deficit, but soon it will be gone, and then we need people to feel better about being here. And you got to be realistic about what it takes to get that. I mean, you know, we're never going to pay like a corporation, and people don't expect that. But they do expect to be paid fairly. They do expect to be recognized when they do a good job, and I think those are reasonable expectations.
Any other questions for Mary?
Yeah, I have a question. With the emphasis on faculty recruitment, and usually faculty then needs some sort of staff support.
Right.
What impact do you see that on staff and also new career issues?
Yeah, so, you know, some of the faculty recruitment will result in staff recruitments, and some of the staff recruitments will come from the same reason we're doing faculty recruitment, which is, if you look at our data, faculty retire at, you know, an average age of something like 67. Staff retire pretty consistently at a younger age, and so we'll have staff recruitments because they'll retire, not just because of the faculty recruitment. So we're gearing up for the same thing on the staff side. We're hoping that some of those faculty recruitments will bring in a great deal of research money, and that always brings staff jobs. In terms of dual career, I think we can expect, you know, a continuing opportunity around dual career, staff and faculty, by the way. That's it's been a reality for us, and it'll continue to be a reality. Probably made a little bit more challenging because we may pick our hiring back up before the local communities do. So we may not have the opportunity for placements anywhere else or as many places as we had in the better years. So we may not be able to look to other universities or other community businesses for placements like we had in better years. You know, I think it's you know, important for those of us like me who haven't been other places to keep reminding ourselves that this isn't just happening to Cornell. This is a national, you know, problem. And so we're, you know, just starting to reemerge out of a difficult situation, and the whole country is still struggling. And so, you know, we have to recognize that about all of our issues. You know, we're in a tiny little, you know, bubble in some aspects of Ithaca, but, you know, we're not alone. And sometimes I think I do end up really personalizing some of this as though we're the only place going through some of these things.
I had one more quick question. Was the 6% increase in our health care costs a result of the Obama administration, or is that just because...
No, Beth, I'm glad you asked that question. No, it really wasn't. So if you look at the elections, you would think so. The addition of the only big potential impact would have been the addition of adult children, because that's the only thing that's hit so far. And no, we're not estimating that to have a major influence on our costs. We're self-insured, so we pay our own costs. And the biggest drivers in our costs continue to be prescription drug usage. We continue to have a high degree of prescription drug use on the campus, and what we call catastrophic claims. So a small number of people who have big health problems push quite a bit of cost into the organization, and so when you pay your own costs, when you're self-insured, you pick all those costs up. And we held down. We did not pass any cost increases on when there were no SIPs. When we didn't have any SIPs, we didn't pass on a health increase.
Except for the copay.
No, we didn't change anything last year.
Not last year. This year it's changing.
This year, this January we did. Last year we passed on nothing. So we absorbed it and went into a deficit. So, and this still does not pass on all of the share of the cost. We absorbed another deficit, but we can't pay. We can't cover all of it this time. We trended a little higher than the national. We're an aging population. That's part of it. We have a good trend of prevention with part of our population. So those who are paying attention to their health, we are seeing their costs stabilize. That's good. But we have another part of our population that's still struggling with that, that is still struggling with hypertension and diabetes and some uncontrolled costs, and those really cost us a lot. So we're continuing to press people into the Cornell Program for Healthy Living, get fit, you know, keep moving, take care of their nutrition and that kind of thing. We believe actually in the same things that healthcare reform talks about, that if you pay attention to your medical costs early, put a little bit more into prevention, you actually see that on the other end. So the Cornell Program for Healthy Living actually pays more money in those areas, and we see it. We now have a longitudinal proof that it actually does pay off in the long run. But we have a very we do have a continuing troubling trend in prescription drugs. Although we are part of a coalition, drug coalition, that continues to give us good discounting.
Just a quick follow-up question to that. Then, do you anticipate that we're going to have to, the employees are going to have to pay taxes on their, on the portion that Cornell pays, on the portion of the cost that Cornell pays? I know, well, that's part of the health care plan, Obama's health care plan.
No, it's not.
That we're going to have to
pay
taxes on the part of that our employees?
No, that's actually not part of the health care plan.
I know, I just saw something on the news about it last night, so.
No, that's actually part of the talking points about repealing, but it's actually not part of the fact. So that was never part of the health care plan. It's not anywhere in the health care plan, and you will never have to do that unless
good enough.
Actually, we'll never have to do that. But it sure did help with some of those victories. So
any last questions?
You do, though, if you're in the degree program, need to keep an eye on the legislation is again about to run out for graduate degrees. You'll have to watch that if you're in the degree program. Nothing I can do about that. So the coverage that protects your tax-free status on your first X number of dollars is about to run out again. And do about that. Section 127, I think, of the tax code, which they keep extending in short stints, is about to run out again. That actually might be advantaged by the most recent elections, because that one does seem to do better under Republicans. So.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Mary.
All right, we don't have a whole lot of time left. So just quickly on the membership expansion update, Jason and I had a discussion earlier, and due to kind of workload issues, I think we're all facing a lot of this, he's unable to continue as chair of that committee. So if we'll be looking for somebody to kind of spearhead that so people can think about it, if somebody's interested in taking on that charge. Talk to Jason, talk to myself, talk to Leslie as well. We've all kind of been working on it. So hopefully we'll get this refigured out, and in the next meeting we can talk about it a little more in depth where we're going. President's address, planning and logistics. Leslie has put together some stuff, and I don't know, did you get my last email?
I did.
Okay. That is next Friday, the 12th. I hope everybody has it on the calendar to join us. But do you want to kind of go through here?
So I put this together because Gary and I attended a United Way, Cornell United Way meeting on Friday. Was it Friday, Gary? To follow up on the idea that we had as a group at our last meeting to do a drawing for anybody who submits a new pledge at the president's reception. I mean, whatever it is, the awards thing. Sorry, address. That's what it's called, president's address. And they were very enthusiastic about the idea, and we're going ahead with it. And we have 7 volunteers from the Cornell United Way who are going to be there to both serve as ushers, to help us with ushering and distributing the pledge cards, and to staff a United Way table in the lobby. So they will have a nice presence there. They're going to wear the Live United t-shirts so people can recognize them. And they will take the pledge cards. The folks from the Business Service Center will take the pledge cards so that we don't have to see them. So it stays confidential, and that's their job. So I put this together because I was thinking about the logistics for that, and then I started thinking about all the other logistics for the event. So the things that are highlighted in yellow are things that we need help with or answers to. Tanya's already answered some of them, but I didn't have time to fix this since she did that. Yes.
The EA pens, I don't know if you're going to have enough. It might be worth buying some new ones, cheaper ones or whatever, and they can be done before the event. So that's why you were asking earlier.
Yeah.
We can get them before the
event. Yeah, I don't know. We might need to just get some golf pencils or something. I mean, I think
I have
we need
some. Okay.
Because we need to, we don't want to assume that people are coming with a pen, but we want to give them the tools that they need to do the pledge. So, yeah, I didn't know how many there were, so.
Well, I'll bring what we have.
Okay, thank you. So the first thing is we have one staff member who wants to attend who is in a wheelchair and will need someone to help get her from the parking lot into the theater. And if someone could volunteer to be her escort, that would be really great.
I'll do that.
Thank you, Gary.
You're welcome.
I'll show you where.
Okay.
I've already arranged for her to have a parking, there'll be a reserved parking space for her, signage and all of that, so she knows that. Tanya already talked with me a little bit about the boxes, but is there anybody who would be willing to make some boxes that would be drop-in boxes for the pledge card? We're going to ask everybody to return their pledge card whether they sign it or not, or whether they write on it or not. That way we don't have to thank you. People for doing it or not, and then they'll just take out the blank ones and reuse them. But is anybody willing to make some boxes that we can get to the United Way logo?
So then how do we know who gets in the drawing for the prizes?
The drawing, they'll do it after the fact. So they'll take the boxes with them, and then they'll separate out the blank cards from the completed cards, do the drawing with the completed cards.
Gotcha.
And we do have some prizes.
Yes, we do.
Mary's going to do lunch for 4. The president's doing coffee for 4 in his office. We've got men's and women's hockey tickets.
8 women's hockey tickets for December 4th, which will be a United Way special event. And 4 men's hockey tickets, 2 for the 15th and 2 for the 14th of January.
And tickets to the short center.
That's it.
Kind of unfortunate for the people who already
played.
Well, but so Beth has a solution to that. We can tell people that they can give $1. You know,
okay.
And you can give any amount on the pledge card. So if they want to be included in the drawing and they've already pledged, they can do that.
Okay.
on the sheet, what is BSC?
Business Service Center.
Oh, okay.
And will somebody be saying something about it once we start the program?
The president has a talking point about it, and I think probably, are you going to dismiss everybody?
We'll probably say a last question and then remind everybody about it at the very end.
And at that point, she could say something about the dollar.
What are we going to do about the moms?
Forgot you were there, Gemma.
The moms, I think, we'll just do like we did last year and put dots on the program or something like that. We didn't want, because they couldn't do the drawing right then and there, we didn't want to someone have to collect all these moms and then worry about delivering them or getting them.
So we've already worked out the details enough for the table, although we didn't answer the do we want to do it at the beginning or the end, the United Way table.
I think we'll just have it set up
just
in the lobby.
Set up. Okay. We've answered the food questions. You see these yummy sandwiches, beef and boursin, turkey and camembert, and the caprese, which is tomato and fresh mozzarella.
And we can thank Mary in the president's office for chipping in the extra money to cover the cost beyond what we were able to cover when we went to Subway last year. They thought it was important that we use a Cornell vendor, so they're chipping in the extra funds to do that.
Yep.
Plus, we're getting more sandwiches than we got last year, right?
No, we're 400. I think we won't do the videos, so because that sounds too complicated. And all of the award winners have been notified already, so that we have one at our table. So we need everybody there.
Mm-hmm. So can everyone plan to be there at about 11:30? Help with whatever we need to do, hand out programs, usher,
answer questions.
And then if people can plan to be there a few minutes at the end just to help. I mean, last year we had a lot of leftover sandwiches.
So you have to
and things
eat them
like that.
All.
So, you know, take them back and whatnot, I don't want to be left with all the sandwiches.
Are we making people take them at the end?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they can't take them inside the theater, right? Yeah.
Is there this like dress attire for us?
No,
that's what you were normally wearing.
Yeah,
it's just normal.
And when you do the introductory remarks, do you want the EA people scattered around the audience or all in one group?
I think what we did last year was I saved seats in the front two rows so we could just acknowledge them that way. So people can plan to sit down in the front, I'll just save those seats.
I suspect we're probably going to have the sandwiches set up before the event starts, so we will have to assign a couple of you to stand in front of the food table and keep people from taking the food.
I mean, people can take them in. We just don't want them opening and eating and being a baby. So if they want to take it beforehand and stick it in their bag, they're welcome to. And last year, I think it worked out okay. I mean, people were simply really good about taking them at the end.
We have for the program.
The program's basically done.
Okay. We're just going to
last year
add a little bit of text about our collaboration with the United Way. We need to work on that. I don't have any text written, so I'll figure something out.
It will be important for you to know how many people donated to the United Way at this event. For our own metrics, then to congratulate ourselves afterwards.
Right, we could put it in the newsletter or the conference.
And we'll put the award winners. I think we would want to announce the award winners too.
Taking a picture of the. Will there be a photographer there to take a picture of the award winner?
Well, they won't know. We're not going to do the drawing until after the.
No,
show.
No. He's talking about the
employee.
Art,
the EA.
Oh, the award
winners. Okay.
Great.
So.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'll take care of the box. You tell me, send me specs of what you need.
Thank you, Linda.
My daughter will be happy to do it this weekend.
Pretty much, if you've just got a box and just cover. I've done them before. I don't know where our box is. I looked for it. But we just cover it with like a wrapping paper and put a slit in the top.
Okay. We need at least two.
Okay. Do you have a reason?
More would be. What did you say?
I just wondered if you had a
reason. No, they don't.
You can just let me know how big the opening is to be out.
Well, it's an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper, folded in thirds.
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably bigger.
It needs to be bigger than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What time are you going to get there, Leslie?
I'll probably get there around 11, because that's when catering, about when catering's going to arrive, and I want to meet them there.
Mm-hmm. What about washing the apples this year?
You wash the apples? Last year, Leslie and I, and the Schwartz Center EA representative team.
How about
washed,
we just put a sign
to I'm just gonna. Yes, I don't know that I'm gonna be able to wash the apples. They're not coming till 10 in the morning.
Don't wash the apples.
So. Yeah.
And if the moms come earlier to the lobby, will anyone be there, or should I plan to be
no,
there?
No, you can just have them come and tell them to find me.
Okay.
Maybe Kim can give us our little.
Kim's giving us the baskets.
Baskets. We've already discussed that.
Do you want me to make the sign for the sandwiches?
Sure. If you want to do that, that would be great. I think what I was just going to do is find some little kind of paint sticks to put them on and stick them on the tables.
Do you have a stand? Do you have a way for them to?
I have stuff here, yeah.
You have stuff, Gemma?
Yep.
Okay. I'll send you the names of the sandwiches.
Okay, thanks.
And I'm going to put out 2 8-foot tables for that.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Report from the chair. Sorry, got her.
Mary was mentioning the health care plan. Mm-hmm. Reminded me of, we got a request from Paul Bursick.
Right, for the University Benefits Committee.
Which is for a meeting that starts, the first meeting is next week.
That's right.
So there's the University Benefits Committee, which has been on hiatus, but is starting up again, and we need two.
At least one, and hopefully two, and if there's three volunteers, there's three plus.
So if anybody's interested in being on that committee.
They want people appointed by the UA, but do they have to be...
By the EA?
By the EA, but do they have to be this
no.
group?
No, they don't. And we have two... It would be great if we had someone from... Right?
Well, Paul was pretty specific that he would prefer to have somebody from the EA. Basically, the National Healthcare Law requires plans meet certain specifications that... maybe more rigorous than they had had to before. So it changes the way the university organizes the health plan and information is going to provide about them, and they need a group of faculty and employee representatives to participate in the discussions about implementing that. So that's what the committee is going to be doing starting next week.
How often
so
are they going to meet?
Probably a few times a semester, I would think.
Are you interested?
Could you find out a little bit more about this recency? Because if it really is only a couple, two, three times a semester, might be something that you'd be interested in as a part of the semester.
I think the best thing would be for us to put anybody who's interested in touch with
Paul.
Okay.
So. I guess. Right, you know. And we had two people who were not EA members who were on the University Benefits Committee years ago who expressed interest last year in continuing on that committee, so they may be interested as well. So if we had some, even if we had someone from the EA and someone from outside of the EA but still staff, would be good.
Are you interested to be on that list?
I've got Lynn and Leslie written down in blood now. I have nothing to report right now, Mr. Chair, just to keep moving things along. Approval of minutes, if everyone wants to very quickly know if there's any comments on the minutes from our last meeting.
I have a couple, as usual.
I am very particular.
Well, you didn't spell Linda's last name right. You have two L's, correct? And there actually were some content things in the second paragraph of 3A. Beth, it refers to something Beth was talking about impossible to include all ideas in the employee assembly. I don't think you were talking about ideas. I think you were talking about perspective. Do you remember?
This was a discussion about increasing the size of the EA.
Yeah.
And it's impossible to include every possible representation, every representation, or a person with every possible representation.
Right.
You can include their ideas, but just not a person.
Right.
That's what I meant.
How do you want me to change the sentence then?
Representation.
Well, that doesn't fit. Doesn't make sense. Beth McKinney commented it would be impossible to include all ideas in the employee assembly. It's the way it currently reads.
Yes.
I mean, you can leave it that way.
What do your druthers say?
My druthers say it would be impossible to include the number of people required to represent every idea or every constituency.
And then on the second page, that the paragraph that starts with Curtis, there's a quote from me. L. Meyerhoff explained that there's a gray area now in the classification of non-exempt employees. What I was talking about was about the policy, not the classification.
So it's a gray area in policy?
About, yeah. Yeah.
Great. So, reading how you'd like it to say.
There's a gray area now on the policy about non-exempt employees and their involvement.
Okay.
And then finally, in item number 4, report from the chair, it was Leslie Meyerhoff, not Leslie Morris, who was at the staff day event.
Yeah, Leslie Morris was not there.
She was not.
She was pardon me.
She was complete.
Good to go.
Any other? So does anybody have a motion?
Motion.
Second. All in favor? With changes?
Aye.
All right. Linda, we've got 5 minutes. You want to talk about sustainability committee, or do we want to talk about that next time?
We could talk about that next time. If I could just put one thing on the radar that maybe we could talk about too, which is I'm now on the Susan Hope group, and the nice thing is that they've moved all the meetings to Thursday for the upcoming year.
Okay.
So I was very pleased to see that. So I do have the dates, which I can maybe forward to let you know what they are, but I think it'd be really nice if early on we could get choose one or two dates that we will be there in serving soup.
Yeah.
Maybe half and half, because we had a lot of people who showed up for the one, so maybe we could split in half to do two different dates. So, and also, I would love the help to be able to communicate it, because we really are going to try to pull in as many staff members as we can to the event. So maybe we can put in our bi-monthly newsletter as well to try to promote it.
Just really quickly, staff recognitions and awards. The committee met and reviewed all of the George Peter Award nominations, and I think we had 5 of them this time around, and we've decided to award to 2, which I will not say because it will be a surprise to them, but
they're in the works.
They're in the works. So stay tuned. You'll hear something about that. And if you haven't been involved in one before, they do, each nominating department is responsible for doing a little event, and EA members are encouraged to attend and participate.
Some dates to come.
They'll appear in the Oracle.
Outlook. Sorry.
I don't say meeting maker anymore.
Any old business? New business.
I do have one question that, it goes back to the president's address, but it's a new business. When I spoke with Chris Salmon, who is the director of EH&S, she asked about their student volunteers, and there are about 80 of them, but they are frontline folks who, many of them are the students who were standing on the bridges
when we were staffing the bridges. She wanted to know whether to include them in inviting them to the award, to the talk, or to include the six or seven who are on the e-board, or none. She didn't care. She just wanted to know.
I think 80 might be hard.
Well, they wouldn't come.
Yeah. But a thought could be that maybe we want to do something, send them pizza or something if they have a time that they all need or something like that.
Yeah, I think they should be honored. They stepped right up with everyone else, and by virtue that they're students, they shouldn't be.
Well, just because this is the president's address to staff, and I would hate to turn staff away if we have a lot of students there. I mean, I think if we want to invite the executive. You know, that's the only thing I'm worried about if we end up having to turn away staff.
Right. Plus, is that an employee award?
Well, we're recognizing these groups, and many of them have students. I mean, Gannett has, you know, students, I'm sure.
Is there
well,
way
they are not employees. They're volunteers.
We're not inviting them to lunch?
I mean, I think we can acknowledge, I mean, EH&S can acknowledge that their student involvement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'll suggest that she do that.
Can I quickly just go back to old business? I sent an email around about promotional items. I don't feel strongly about this one way or the other, so people think we need some promotional items for things like Soup and Hope and, you know, the dress. We're going to have pens and the address and stuff. I mean, I'm happy to go do something, but I don't know how people feel about spending money that way or not.
I have no idea.
And they
have
it.
You
have
it in
your
budget.
I know I have it in my budget, but...
But we don't need to spend money just for the sake of
right.
Spending.
I didn't know anything had
been years.
If we want to do it, we don't want to do it. I didn't get any feedback. So.
I'm replying. Okay.
All right. I guess nobody
else draws it.
It's
in my
I mean, it's not that important. It's just, you know, whether if we want them to have on hand to do or things like that, and if people think that they're worthwhile.
Well, the problem is when you want them,
you don't have them.
Right.
Well,
like, you have to really plan ahead.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because now you want them for, you know, present stress, and we have very few. So,
right.
You know, I mean, you sort of have to.
Right. And then the other question is that really worthwhile, or do people just take them and throw them away?
But if they were water bottles, man, I see those water bottles everywhere on campus.
I'm using mine. Yeah.
So, I think we're done. Motion to adjourn.
Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.